everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 201. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's software, hardware, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. And by our Linux fancy, I mean, of course, myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend, the Linux Maven, door-to-door geek, Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. All in all, I'm going to say it's pretty good. Busy week. Things are a-changing, is what I'll say. My immediate boss, he put in his resignation, basically. He came from the corporate world, came to government for a good at least 6 years. He decided it's time for him to move on. And then, basically, a coworker, a supervisor, manager of a section, a couple of days later, put in his resignation to move on to a better job at another state agency.
That's hilarious, because my direct supervisor did the exact same thing, right? She put in her notice. She'll be leaving in the next 7 to 10 days. And then a coworker of mine, who was also the same position in the company as myself, is also moving north in order to take a better position with a different company.
Apparently, this is the time of year for people to just say bye.
I guess so. Hey, you know what they say, the time is now, Dor.
Apparently it is. I'll say, I'm not, you know, scared, worried, threatened, whatever. I've been at this place for 20 years, and, you know, I'm bound to see lots of changes, and some good, some bad. Bottom line is, I just keep moving forward, keep trying to get things done, trying to make things advance, at least a little bit at a time. And the one thing it took me a very long time to realize is, I can't make a change if I'm the only person who really knows how to support it, because the institution itself will never go for that, because what if I leave? Even though I have no plans on leaving, they always need somebody else there who can pick up the ball. I never make decisions based upon people or individual talent. I always try to make decisions based off of job descriptions, if that made any sense.
It does.
Okay, good, because I wasn't sure if it did, because, you know.
Cool. Yeah. The one constant in life is change, so we're just gonna have to get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of change, we're in a new centennial as far as the show is concerned. So let's kick it off correct with a really good link to an article sent in by our good friend Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review on an offensive security and countermeasures using Kali Linux talk that he is giving at OLF, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And he's already given the talk once, so this is a kind of a second go around of the talk. And I got to, and then this link will be in the show notes for those of you who want to definitely follow it around. But for those of you who aren't aware, Tony and Mary and the crew over there have been doing that show for at least 4 or 5 years, if not longer now. Yeah. They're based out of the Michigan, Detroit area. And if I'm not mistaken, and this is a link to either a synopsis or the talk itself that he provided us with. But he spoke to Dora a little bit more about it than he did me.
Well, it really wasn't a lot. I just heard he was doing a talk and I got giddy. I like hearing people I already have some history with giving a talk, because then I have at least a little bit of a general idea of what to expect. I can tell you this much. Tony is the guy, if you ask him to turn around and pull up his shirt, you'll see nothing but scars from the business. Just, this guy has seen more action than Rambo kind of thing in the field. So when he talks about things, he always seems to talk about stuff with some really deep experience that I don't think a lot of other people really have. So to hear him doing a offensive security talk, I know he's going to be talking about little things that other people will just gloss right over that really do mean a lot in this kind of field. And it also means I'm basically guaranteed to at least see him, Mary, and Tom. Tom is another one of those utterly advanced fellas who really does enjoy what he does kind of thing. It's very obvious. So I'm looking forward to seeing that crew again, shaking their hands. And I would love it if I could literally help Tony's talk become a blowout with standing room only, I'm literally tempted to like make a sign and walk around like 20 minutes before Tony's talk. Offensive security in room 202. Offensive security. Just because I'd like to see him have a packed room. He deserves it.
Oh, so it's offensive, not offensive.
It's however you decide to pronounce it, Mr. Lingus.
Oh, man. Well, that takes a whole other connotation now, and I don't know if I'm interested. I thought he was going to be flipping the bird, you know.
I'm sorry. I would say I was kind of ignoring
doing all sorts of other things. Oh, and by the way, for those of you keeping score, door seeing Tony shirtless confirmed, as you mentioned earlier. Yeah. Exactly. But no, I haven't met Tom, but I've met Tony and Mary both, I think at least twice. Yeah, fantastic folks. And Dor, you know just as well as I do, all you need to do if you want to contribute more to the standing room onlyness of that talk is you put your fez on, you just start walking around in a circle. You're going to have a second, third, and fourth deep, you know, generation entourage following you, and you just walk right into the room, and all of a sudden it's filled up. So just do that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Tony did send us an email with a YouTube link to Michigan User Group YouTube channel with the talk on it. Then he has the link going to his personal website, Bemis Hosting. And every time I read that, I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce it like horribly wrong. Where he basically talks about the talk in general and give some links on some of the things that he's going to mention. I'm going to make sure all of that is in the notes. And A, Tony, thank you for letting me know about this ahead of time. B, thank you for submitting for a talk. And C, thank you, OLF, for granting him the talk. Because I do believe he's actually put in for this for a talk before, and he just didn't get picked for some reason.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he made it in this time, especially because you've attended several events with me, and these are the ones that I tend to gravitate to the most when I'm, because I mean, if you haven't attended a Linux Fest before, you know, you have a huge catalog of talks, and a lot of them overlap. A lot of them, are on separate days. It's just kind of a, I don't know how they go about planning these, to be honest with you. I know they do some tracks. Anyhow, I'm almost always, I want to see two or three that are happening at the same time. I always gravitate toward anything security or encryption based as almost a priority, just because that's a personal interest of mine. So when I was reading the email about this, I knew it was from Tony, and I knew this was something I was interested in, so that made it all the more worthwhile to me. I hope that they upload this shortly after it being recorded, or at least he has a copy of it so I can get to it or watch a video on YouTube or what have you. But yeah, quite a few cool topics. And like I said, this is kind of the second, if not third generation of this talk. So he's tightened it up. He's honed it a little bit more. He already gave it to his local group there in Michigan. So yeah, more power to him. I'm glad he got to get in on this with such good material as well. I'm very happy for him.
Yeah, definitely good stuff. And again, this is beginning of October, I believe, October 7th and 8th, downtown Columbus, Ohio, Greater Columbus Convention Center, technically, but it's actually in the basement of the Hyatt, I believe is the hotel.
Okay, good deal. All right, let's see. Oh, yeah, so last night or really early this morning, I got a Voxer message from Dor that just said, better late than never, and it had this link in it. And how long did I send you a request for something like this? It must have been months ago, if not longer than that. The Raspberry Pi picture frame slideshow?
Oh, my brain is completely fried, Cody, so I quite often need extreme hand-holding, so I apologize.
That's okay.
We talked about this, had to be well over a year ago, where you were talking about wanting to have a easy solution to do a slideshow with a Raspberry Pi and a screen. And we were able to find plenty of people telling you how to do it. And we found plenty of tools that helped make it happen. But what we never found, at least I never found, was a dedicated distribution where basically you could, like a magazine and a gun, using the correct vernacular, not calling it a clip, putting a magazine in a gun and click and go. So there is a company out there that's basically doing a Raspberry Pi slideshow focused operating system.
BinaryEmotions.com.
Well, I'd say that person might need some medication, but if they make a good distro, I guess it's okay.
Yeah, and this is actually really cool because yeah, it's just a it's a customized OS where you just plug in a USB key with a image and or video files or text files with remote media links and boot. The system will display a slideshow of them in full screen view, and it just loops through them one by one, and then it comes back to the front and just keeps going. There was something like this that I use or is not was sorry. So like the Raspberry Pi Video Looper, but I think that even that's on version like 3 or 4 now by who was it? Stephen Hickson. But that was I actually haven't tried it with image files, but I know I was using that exclusively for video, but this claims to do image, video, and or text files. So this will be neat to play with. This is great if, for instance, I work in a retail setting where I play videos all day just on a loop, and then I have a separate device if I want to play any clips on demand or from a request from one of our customers in order to assist with the sale of a product. So I personally set that up in one of my locations, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago, and it's helped dramatically with performance. So, I mean, there are tons of different applications for this. In fact, I think the one in the photo here, it's just like a, you know, like a big screen kiosk type of thing that they're using. It looks like covering up above a food court, so it's just displaying advertisements. There's a lot of different applications for this. What I would love to do, Door, if I may, have even though it's all on Hulu right now, I would love to have one of something like this set up with every episode of Seinfeld just looping in my office at all times, except for when I'm recording a show, because I could watch any episode of that show anytime, and if I just had like a little Seinfeld Raspberry Pi box just playing episodes all day long, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, see, I would do the same thing, but I would probably do it with Quantum Leap
Well, there you go.
or Star Trek Next
Yeah,
Generation,
see,
because
yeah, I can do Next
I'm a
Generation.
nerd after all. Yeah, but I gotta say, Seinfeld is one of the very few shows, even if I've seen the episode before, and I'll sit there and watch it again just because it's still funny the second time around.
Definitely.
And so many comedies just have a hard time doing that. I will say one thing I like about this one is you can have things play from local media, remote URLs, or remote list. So you can actually have a file on a USB key, a text file, and in that text file, say podnuts.com/images/list.txt. And in that list on that server, you can have a list of images or media files, listed URLs, and it will actually read that list and then play that list of files. So there's a bunch of different ways you can display media, and you can actually intermingle them. So you can have two pictures on the thumb drive, but then link to a video as a third option, and then it will basically show the picture, show the next picture, and then show that video.
That's
So
fantastic.
I really do like the flexibility of this one, and dare I say, the simplicity of this one. You just burn an image, boot it up, and there you go. The options seem very, I don't want to say logical, but almost tangible. You know, just put files in there or put a text file in there pointing to someplace else.
Yeah, see, I didn't even fully read that option. And the thing is that sounds great if you have a network connectivity with the device. Because with the one that I use, we have an in-store Wi-Fi, but it's just garbage. So I wouldn't rely on it for anything streaming whatsoever. And I'd rather not tether that video from my phone all day, even though I have 100% unlimited 4G LTE, but I digress. Although it would be funny to see how high I could get my usage for the month.
Oh,
Yes.
it would get high.
Yes, it would.
See, I like that because hypothetically, let's say you're owner of a drinking establishment and you have three of these screens up. Well, you can have all of them just pointing to one box in the back.
Yes, yeah.
So then whenever you change prices or change menu or change sales, you just change one thing on one computer and it automatically gets fixed on all of the displays. That's the kind of functionality that would actually encourage me to use this type of solution. And this is the kind of solution where if I was in the computer service field, I would be heavily offering digital signage as one of my services, because you can charge top dollar for this kind of functionality, because most people just look at it as smoke and mirrors and voodoo and chicken bones.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was getting to, was that this is perfect. For instance, when I want to alter the files on mine, I need to obviously pull the SD card out of the Pi, put it into a machine, and then swap out the video files and then upload it. Whereas if the Pi had network connectivity where I was using it, then I could just upload the files on a server, and then it's still pointing to that directory, and it's just looping them that way. So that would be very ideal, especially if you're running multiple monitors like that. Yeah, that's a fantastic, good point.
Very, very good stuff. The one thing I wanted to mention, and it's basically I don't want to say correction, but it's a pivot. How about that one?
Oh, geez.
It's a pivot.
Pivot is the 2016 version. I'm sick of hearing the word pivot, to be honest with you. Are you hearing it at work?
Let me pivot after all. Can I pivot now?
No, because pivot is the corporate is the 2016 corporate speak version of synergy.
Well, can I synergistically pivot?
You can sashay.
If it's okay. Oh, I can sashay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can pick and roll. Go ahead.
I can pick and roll. Well, as long as you don't pick your nose.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to bring here, it's a follow-up to the article we brought last week about the federal government and a certain percentage of code having to be published as open source. And we did hint at how there's going to be certain agencies kicking back, certain agencies fighting it or whatever. Well, here's an article from FCW. I have no idea what that stands for, but it's the Business of Federal Technology, which I think is almost an oxymoron, but let's not go there. If you scroll down to like the fifth or sixth paragraph or something, it's basically states that security agencies, it says, but DOD and other national security agencies are exempt from it. Oh, isn't that nice? I will say I have known a couple people that work at DOD. I do know actually more than a couple who work for security agencies, considering I live right up the street of 295 and the NSA headquarters building. The people I know there who know anything about technology evolution, future technology and current technology, current risk, current security models, that kind of thing, they all basically say if the DOD didn't use open technology at all, they would need like 10 times the staff developing everything from scratch. There's no way we can afford to make everything from scratch. So we have to stand on the shoulders of giants. We have to borrow stuff that's already out there in the world and then tweak it to be our own thing. And on this article, it's basically saying that the DOD is going to have to embrace open technology in order to stay ahead of everybody else in the coming years. I will say NSA does release some of its code anyway, not a whole lot of it, but they do release some stuff. The best type of security out there is when the people open up their trench coat, if you will, because then they have nothing to hide. That means the most talented people in the world are trying to rip that code to shreds. The most talented people in the world are trying to find exploits in it, and not just people sitting in the bottom of a building who don't have raw internet access and cannot even bring their cell phones into work because it's a violation of their security policy. So if the DOD thinks it can get away with not using open technologies, I don't think that's a very good future for this country. And allowing them to be completely exempt from this, I think is wrong. I don't think they should I don't know if any agency should be mandated to release all of their source code, but I mean, we even have banking institutions contributing to open source code. Citibank themselves are donating code to open source. That's like millions and billions of dollars behind some of that code. So if it's good enough for them, I can't believe how it couldn't be good enough for, everybody else.
Yeah, you would think so, but then again, they get to make the rules to a certain extent. So, yeah, it's but are they still going to be reaping the benefits of implementing the software? Is the question.
I know the people I know that work there are extremely tight-lipped when it comes to any details. Kind of like the people I know who work in certain retail spaces, and it's because they have to be. Period. They have to be. And to be honest, when it comes to any of those people I know, I don't want to know any of that stuff. I really don't want to know any of it because enough people don't like me already. Let's not push this even further. So I do think it's inevitable. I do think it's going to be more. I do think it's going to become the standard for a lot of software. All of our companies are going to have our own private blobs of software that do some kind of finagling in the systems, which is a technical term, by the way. But I think the core, the backbone of most infrastructures are going to have to be open in at least some way.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just going to lead, ideally, it will lead to more, stable operations. They're not going to be locked into, horrendous service contracts where they're essentially locked into certain software solutions. And if you look at over the past couple, three to 5 years, there's been several countries and government organizations that have switched to open source, saving in the millions, if not tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And you have to then ask yourself, well, then what did they put that money toward? If they were provided with an adequate solution for what they needed, and then they saved this much money, then what else were you able to accomplish with those funds? That really needs to be a consideration as well.
I'm going to guess the money went toward yachts and vacations, but I don't know. The next one I wanted to just talk about just for a second, and it's kind of related. It's semi-related. It could be related, but I'm just going with that. Line 74 in our notes. And this, to me, is the example of just how far all of this quote-unquote openness is going. If you go to opensource.microsoft.com, this is all of the Microsoft code right now available to download on GitHub. Now, if we were to take all of the open code and each bit weighed a certain amount, and then we take all of their closed proprietary codes and each bit would weigh a certain amount, that same certain amount, I'm sure the proprietary code would outweigh it. I'm not trying to state the volume of what Microsoft is releasing out in the open code, but just the simple fact that, A, they are. And if you go down to the bottom of the page, 36 on a page, and it looks like that total up to 5 pages long. So let's just say 40 times 5, almost 200 different software projects that they have completely out in the open that if you want to, you can download, you can tweak on your own, and use them as however you see fit. Some of this is actually a little bit bigger code. The example I'm going to use is a entity framework. And the reason I'm using that one is because I know for a fact there are more than a couple companies that use this as basically an engine. And all this entity framework is, it's a tool that I know people use in .NET to have more feature-rich connections to databases. And it isn't that they're more feature-rich, it's that the developer gets a richer interface in creating connections, creating queries, creating filters, and creating sort options. And this is heavily used, heavily and is heavily relied upon because developers are not database administrators. Developers do not know all the ins and outs of every SQL parameter type. Like, what's the difference between where and having? They just don't understand the consequences. They really don't completely grasp the full power of an or statement in SQL until something doesn't work and they have to figure it out. This is the kind of thing where, to be quite honest, if you want a job in a company, these are the kind of things that you can right now go download, play with, learn, get experience, and put them on your resume for real and not have to, you know, once again, that technical term, finagle your resume to sound better than it actually is. You can actually come here and download Microsoft stuff and say, I've worked on these Microsoft things. And if you notice, one of them on there is Bash on Windows.
Yeah.
Yep. I got a Windows 10 computer at work after specifically requesting it. I installed Windows 10 Anniversary Update. Well, here's a perfect example of Windows. Okay, I launch Windows. I launch Windows Update. I click Advanced. I click Upgrade to Anniversary. I click it. It runs. 30 minutes later, it says, unable to finish. Here's your error code. I research the error code. Nobody has any freaking clue what's going on. They say the solution is to create physical media, then boot from that and do the upgrade. I'm not doing that.
Of course.
So I go back and click try again. And it works for 20 minutes. So like an hour later, it comes back and says, failed. Same exact error code. So then for giggles, I know I had a two-hour meeting. I clicked back, try again. I went to the meeting. I came back and installed the Anniversary Edition. So I did nothing different. And all of a sudden, the OS decides, oh, wait, this time, give this guy a green light. He's tried three times. He must really want it.
It is a charm, you know.
It is. And it's not a crazy powerful computer, but it is a quad-core i5 with 8 gigs of RAM. And this is by far the slowest Bash terminal I've ever used in my life. It was painful to use. It was painful to use. It was so slow. But it did have all the features. And right from that command line, you can do an apt-get install. I'm sorry. I don't use apt-get anymore. Sorry. Forgive me, Father Privacy. Apt-install a GUI application. And then right in the command line, type that GUI name, and it pops right up. So you can install Firefox, FileZilla, LibreOffice. I mean, almost anything you can think of in a GUI, you can install it right there like you're on a genuine Ubuntu OS. Because you kind of...
What is that called again? Sorry?
Bash on Linux.
Oh, no. I meant the alternate app that you were just talking about.
Okay, apt-get. Okay, apt-get was supposedly being deprecated now for like 5 years.
Right.
You were supposed to be using aptitude, I believe. In 16.04 version of Ubuntu, they've changed. You can still use apt-get, and it still works just fine, but you can also use apt. So it's just sudo apt install. Or sudo apt upgrade. You don't have to do the dash git, and you get more rich, verbose feedback, if you will. When you click, like, update, you know, sudo apt update, you actually get a global progress meter at the bottom of the screen. So you have a much better idea how close you actually are to being done. And then when you do sudo apt install, it actually has a progress meter, again, on the very bottom. So you can see how close it actually is to being done. And there's a little bit of a prettier color things going on with the text. So it's a little bit easier to read and identify what's going on.
I'll have to check that out. I'm just getting ready to blow away one of my current systems and sort of rebuild from the ground up. So, you know, it'd be a great opportunity for me to give that a whack.
Very cool, very cool. So I'm going to play with it at work. I'm going to try to load some either what's called continuous integration applications and see how much of an enterprise use we could have for them there. And I'm also going to try some configuration management applications like either SaltStack or Puppet to see if I can actually remotely connect to servers, suck down any kind of configuration, and then duplicate that configuration on another server. Because that's one of the things in the Windows world that is incredibly difficult to do, unless you know, like, supreme deep knowledge of what you're doing.
Well, that's interesting.
And I have no intimate deep knowledge of any Windows server since maybe Windows NT.
Yeah, me either.
Well, you know, sometimes you just don't want it. You know, kind of like, you know, sometimes people say you don't want to know how the hot dog's made.
Right.
Because you'll get sick. I really don't want to know how a Windows server works most of the time because it would just make me sick on how bad it is. The next one to just mention real quick, I don't remember if I mentioned on the show before, Cody, line 72. And I'm going to say this is pronounced Maru. M-A-R-U. What this basically is, this is that old promise we got, Cody, 6 years ago now, about maybe 5 years ago, from Ubuntu. And then we had promised again about 3 years ago from Microsoft of convergence.
Mm-hmm.
One device, you plug it up, and depending on the screen size, you have a completely different interface. Well, that's what this is. This is Maru OS. You flash it to compatible phones. I know, like, the Nexus 5 is one of the compatible phones. And then you boot up your phone. Boom, you have Android. But then when you plug your phone into a bigger screen, like via HML plug, which is just micro USB to HDMI.
I have to correct you there. It's MHL.
What did I say?
I thought you said HML.
I might have very well said
it. Yeah.
Yes, MHL. Yeah. And then there's another technology, I believe, called SlimPort.
Yes. Yeah. They're it's essentially a micro USB male plug into an HDMI female plug. And it's kind of like Coke and Pepsi when it comes to which one your phone will support. If I remember correctly, it's most Samsung devices that support video out anyway do MHL. For instance, when I had, my old HTC One M7, I think that one did SlimPort. And then when I had my Nexus 5, that did SlimPort as well. And the Nexus 7 2013 tablet that did SlimPort as well. But yeah, if you're looking to, if for this purpose or for any other, use a device in order to do video out from it, make sure that you do the research to figure out which technology, in fact, that you need first before you buy your adapter. The adapters are, you know, less than $20 nowadays, but, you know, it could be that much wasted if you buy the wrong one versus the other.
Right. And to be honest, this is the one technology that had me really close to buying a Nexus 5 on spite, is the only way I can put it. Because I really do enjoy my Android device. I really do enjoy using a lot of data. And this would give me the option of going to work, just plugging it up to a big screen monitor at work, pulling out a keyboard and a little hub, and, you know, Bluetoothing into the Nexus, and then doing my stuff. So it's Android on the phone. Then when you hook up the MHL, it's basically a full-blown Debian-based desktop, I believe running XFCE.
Wow.
With a full Debian access to do all the Debian goodness kind of things. This is the kind of little thing, I'm going to say, that really does make me giddy about, technology in the future. Because this was my dream as a kid, always, to have my quote-unquote computer in my pocket.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, that was about 2.5 years ago or so. But yeah, when I was mobile and having to interface with our company's web portal for, you know, documentation, reviews and so forth, just general note taking, I didn't have a laptop at the time. I think that was right when my my Acer Chromebook C710 started to kind of go kaput, and that's a whole other story in itself. But the Nexus 5, I had a little Samsung Bluetooth keyboard that had some USB ports on it, so I would make sure I had and took I think two if not three AAA batteries. I got some rechargeable AAA batteries that I could use a USB charger to, you know, recharge. So I kept, you know, two or three rounds of those on me at all times. But I would have the SlimPort adapter and HDMI cable, plug it into a monitor at any one of the locations I was visiting, Bluetooth keyboard into that, and then have a wireless mouse plug into one of the USB ports, and I had my own little portal computer, you know, running Android. I was able to get onto Google Docs. I was able to, I mean, you know, do everything I could on the phone, but now it was just on, you know, the bigger screen. If I was going to be doing it more frequently, though, I'd probably spring for one of those nice Logitech, the bigger Bluetooth keyboards that actually has like the trackpad on it, because that would probably be a better experience with Android.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'll say the real reason I'm bringing this is because August 26th, I got an email because I did subscribe to their mailing list basically. And it said, "Hey guys, I'm happy to announce that Maru has been fully open sourced under their project." Before you basically had to join them, be accepted into the beta, and then you could download the OS.
Okay.
So you don't have to basically wait anymore. Now you can just get your Nexus 5, click download, and away you go. You can go ahead and play with this.
Chuck Litchfield, if you're listening out there, I think he still has a Nexus 5 or 2. He's got some, well, let's just say he has a swarm of Android phones. Oh, okay. I gotta digress for this. So when I say swarm, I'm thinking, you know, multiple, you know, like the plural for moose is moose.
Yeah.
I had somebody recently tell me this, you know, like there's a murder of crows, there's a pride of lions, but what do you call a bunch of bros?
Brothel? I don't know what.
It's a swole. A swole of bros.
Mm.
Okay. Anyway, if you're in a college town, you see a lot of bros walking around, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, but yeah, Chuck is one of the only people I personally know that might still have a Nexus 5. You can go on to Swappa or eBay. I would recommend Swappa over eBay, but maybe check. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna swap that for myself and for the benefit of our listeners here. Let's just say, because that's the one thing.
110.
That's the one thing that I really don't like about the Nexus 6, my phone that I've been rocking for almost 2 years now. No video out. Really stinks. Oops. Come on.
Yeah, well, right now on Swappa, there's no Nexus 5 internationals. There is regular Nexus 5s. You can get one right now for $95.
Yeah, see, that's just... oops. Yeah, so less than $100. I mean, realistically, less than $125 shipped for a 16 or... yeah, well, $150 for like a 32 gig, which you're probably going to want if you're... realistically, if you're doing this and potentially installing apps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there is right now the $95 one is a 32 gig.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, from Fort Wayne, Indiana. We could have Jeff Owens swing by, pick it up. Maybe you know, fly out here, hand deliver it. He'd probably do that. He's not busy.
Not at all. Nah. I would love to. OLF coming up. Can't do nothing. And there's a real quick side tangent, Cody. And this is not Linux related. And if you don't like this, well then. I guess you can go listen to something else.
I really can't because I'm on the show.
Well,
oh, you weren't talking to me.
To the audience.
Okay, fine.
Did you hear that basically Nexus is dead?
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Google announced that there's basically going. Well, they didn't announce. There's basically a leak that the name Nexus done. We're not having any more of those devices released ever again. They're still going to support them for years or whatever. There's going to be no more Nexuses.
Even with this new one?
Yeah, it's not going to be called a Nexus.
I'm going to buy a label maker and name it Nexus myself. And I'll be like, well, what's that, Google? It says right back here on the back of the phone. See, that I don't care. I care less about the name because honestly, like, that's not to sound elitist at all, okay? But that's a very high brand, like, name that not most people are going to immediately associate with what it actually is. So, in that respect, they can call it whatever they want as long as they're still providing the device with the same functionality. The leaks that have come out from that new, the new Nexus phones built by one of my favorite smartphone manufacturers, HTC. It looks like a great device. It does have a fingerprint reader, which at the beginning I was kind of resistant to, but they're just on everything now. You don't have to use it, but whatever. I owned several of their devices. In fact, aside from when I was a filthy heathen iPhone user, it was my first my first five or six Android phones were all HTC devices. So I could care less what it's called as long as I'm still getting updates. And actually, this and I'm kind of dovetailing off of this too. But did you? I can't remember who posted this on Google Plus, but you know who Kim Komando is, obviously, Dor.
Unfortunately, I do.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I've never listened to her for more than 2 seconds, 3 seconds, yeah, maybe, and I like threw up in my mouth and had to curb and turn.
I've had to suffer through several minutes of it with my father in the car. You know, when I was a teenager in my youth. Anyhow, her organization recently sent out one of those FUD articles about, oh, Chromebooks might be the best sellers, but you got to know this before you buy one. Talking about the 5-year window, you know, of support, and I'm like, well, yeah.
Who has a functional laptop for more than 5 years?
Right. Well, okay.
The percentage of consumers, what, 2?
My argument to that is, okay, let's say that that is 100% true. The software that you're running now will be completely different from the software that you'll be wanting to run in 3, if not 5 years anyway. So if you're talking about buying a piece of hardware, whether it be a smartphone or a laptop or a desktop or a tablet or whatever, and you're planning on using it in 5, if not 7, 10 years from now, that's your fault because you don't understand how this works.
Yeah, I'll say if you're still using Windows XP, then heed Kim Komando's words.
If you're still running Windows XP, you're not listening to this show, so it doesn't even matter. But yeah, it's just these. I'm more attuned to clickbait awful headlines nowadays to where I'm not even affected by them unless I hear other people talk about them. And then, of course, I start to ask, well, what does that actually mean? Well, did you read the article? Oh, well, no. Okay, well, then shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Where was the article? Oh, I don't remember. I saw it on Facebook or whatever, you know. But that comes down to something I spoke about years ago. I don't know if I remember it on this show or whatever, but when it comes to Linux and when it comes to Android and open source software, I think we all kind of go through phases of how we want to communicate the message, communicate our experience of it. And at first, a lot of people are really they feel liberated by using this software, by having these choices and these options, and you want to share it with everybody. But then after a while, you know, you're sort of kind of banging your head against a wall, realizing that by sharing it with everyone, you're sort of disenfranchising yourself because more than half of them are never going to try it. They're never going to listen because no matter what you say, they're going to be at Walmart next week and they're going to see a Toshiba laptop on sale for $149. They're just going to grab that with Windows whatever on it. Or they're just going to get this smartphone that they bought off some guy off Craigslist or whatever the excuse is. So don't feel like you need to save everybody. Think of it as the zombie apocalypse or think of it as your house is on fire. Save what's important to you. Save the worthwhile people in your life or the worthwhile objects, because I don't preach open source and Linux use as much as I used to in the past. But if I have friends come to me with enough questions or enough, you know, bad experiences on other platforms, you know, no matter what the device is, that's when I start to sort of, you know, put the cracker out there or the carrot, so to speak. And there are a ton more options out there now. But yeah, articles like this Nexus thing going away and then the Chromebook deal, it's causing more worry, I think, and more FUD than it's really deserved thinking about. It's not worth the brain cycles.
Well, no. Anybody who thinks I'm going to buy something and have support for life, you obviously don't understand computing devices whatsoever. Everything drops support, period. And if anyone in your family or your extended friends worry about your Chromebook dropping support, I literally encourage you, stop talking to them.
Yep.
Their low intellect will eventually drag you down.
Right.
Anyone who overly cares about the Nexus line dying is basically the same thing, because like Cody said, in a way, I don't care what they call it. As long as Google supports or stamps a device and says, this is a standard device, take a look at it, build off of it, build your software off of it, and you're guaranteed some level of compatibility, that's all I care about. I don't care if they call it the turd phone. If it's a nice phone, I still might get it and happily walk around with a device called a turd just because it can, you know, do these kind of things. And this is the first time, literally, Cody, in 3 years, I want to say, I'm actually entertaining the idea of getting a Nexus device again because they have a couple features on it. Or whatever they call it, the next device. Supposedly, one of the things we're going to have on it is basically duplicated partitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which means when you get big updates on your phone, it's going to background going to basically update the second partitions with all those updates. So the next time you reboot your phone, there's no rebuilding process. There's no please wait Google app rebuilding 1 out of 250, 2 out of 250,
ugh,
you know, God, process.
I know. Hours.
The other thing that they were bringing in was the built-in native Wi-Fi feature. Can't remember what it's called, but basically, you walk up to McDonald's, you have your Wi-Fi turned on, you don't even click connect to McDonald's. It automatically connects, but then it creates an encrypted tunnel from your phone straight up to the Google server. So you have secure communications with any of these servers, and you're not using your mobile data, and in some cases it really should be faster than your mobile data. And this next device is also supposed to have a service where spam numbers are collected on the back end, and then when a known spam caller calls you, it will tell you right next to the number probable spam call, so you'll know right there whether or not to pick it up. And those three features had me thinking, you know, my next device might be one of these devices, but I don't know now. Well, I don't know now because I never knew. I got to wait to see the device.
So let me, because you brought it up, and the second one was kind of fascinating to me. So you know how a Wi-Fi pineapple works.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that come into play with that auto Wi-Fi deal?
You're screwed.
Right. Which is why I don't like it.
Anywhere you have Wi-Fi turned on, you can be in your own house.
Well, right.
And no. And if your access point is on the other side of the house, and I'm
in the parking, or yeah,
house
right,
wall,
right.
I still got you. There's no way to avoid the pineapple. It's just like ninjas. The one security guy said, if you walk down the street every day fearing ninjas, there's nothing you can do. The ninjas will kill you. But you can't worry about them. Because what's the actual likelihood of that happening? Same thing with a pineapple, I'll say. Unless you're at DEF CON, unless you're at, a big event like that, I think the likelihood of getting a pineapple attack on you is low. And I'll say this. If you really are worried about the pineapple, then what you need to do is something I will never do, which is periodically change your home Wi-Fi access point passwords.
Right. Yeah. I'm not necessarily worried about it at home, but yeah, just out in public, like I don't turn Wi-Fi on at all. I don't currently have a VPN service I'm using, so I never get onto public Wi-Fi. But yeah, I just thought I would, because that was something that I wasn't aware of, that feature, quote unquote feature, with the new Nexus device. Yeah, I like the partition deal. They're actually also, for those of you who don't know this, they're not selling, or at least I think they phased it out with the 5X and the 6P, but they're not selling them through, I believe with this current generation, the upcoming generation, they're not going to be selling the phones in through carriers. You're gonna have to buy them through Google exclusively, and they'll come with either baked in or as an added service, kind of like what Apple's doing with the you know drop protection replacement type of deal. I think I know they did that on the 6P with that the back camera glass plate. They had some sort of a good exchange program for that, because those are just cracking just from normal wear and tear being in my pocket, not even dropping it. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, because as it is, it's already kind of like an elite option that not a lot of people know about. But if it's becoming even more, I should say even less mainstream by becoming more obscure to get it straight from Google, then, I mean, is that really a good thing, or is it just, you know, them, I guess, leveraging their online store to sell their specific products.
Right. And I mean, everything dies. We're on Ubuntu. Well, at least I am. Ubuntu 14.04 was a long-term support edition, which means it's long-term support, but you're going to lose support. Debian has really long support cycles, but you're going to lose support. Mac OS, you go buy a new Crapbook Air today or whatever they're called, and eventually you're going to lose support. You go buy a Dell, an HP of any level, of any grade, of any specification, you're going to lose support. You go buy a phone, whether it's a BlackBerry, an iPhone, an Android, it's going to lose support. You go buy a Blu-ray player, you're going to lose support. Anything you buy with a chip in it, sooner or later, you're going to lose support. To try to make a big deal out of Chromebooks losing support, to me, is like trying to warn you that you shouldn't buy a car because the tires are going to go bald. You know how dangerous that is? You know what? You know, if you're driving down the road and that tire blows out, you're going to die. I mean, I'm so happy I don't know her personally, because I would ring her out. I would harangue her. I would literally just tongue lash her. I don't care if I'm in a McDonald's with my kid and I see her and I know it's her. I would just let her have it for just spreading FUD. There's few things in this life that really get me incredibly upset, but spreading FUD purposefully, deliberately, is one of those things that just drives me absolutely nuts. There's real things to worry about in this world. There's really things to concern yourself about, like not vaccinating your kids. Yeah, I said it. But to worry about a Chromebook losing support and try to fearmonger people based off of that just shows me a complete lack of imagination, if you will.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
But, you know. One last article I just want to throw out there, line 75, Cody, on Linux.com. And the real reason I want to bring this up is because who's not on this list? And it is the top 10 developers and companies contributing to the Linux kernel in from the end of 2015, I believe, is to 2016. Page down, page down, page down. There's more than a couple names, people I don't know if anyone's ever heard of, but the number of changes by the number 10 slot is 631. 631. So on average, almost two times a day, this guy submitted a patch. That is dedication, and I really hope he's getting paid for it. Then if you go down a little bit, there's the top 10 companies who are making contributions to the Linux kernel. And I believe I predicted this, Cody. Of course, I don't remember, because my memory is always crystal clear in my favor.
yeah.
Microsoft was the number one contributor to the Linux kernel at one point in time. That was when they were bringing Hypervisor, which is their virtualization technology. They were trying to bring it up to par with everything else. And during the beginning of Azure, Mark Rusinovich himself was helping Microsoft contribute code to Linux to ensure that Azure would work well with Linux. And I'm pretty sure I said, and once Microsoft gets what they want, they're done. And on the top, and they were literally, I believe, number two or three on that list like 2 years ago. And now they're not even in the top 10. So dare I say to Microsoft, Linux is a rag. And once they don't find any more clean spots on the rag, they're just going to discard it, kind of thing. They're just going to use it. They're just going to use it as a tool to get out of it what they need. And then once they are done getting what they need, they just throw it in a corner kind of thing. But again, I will say I'm not shocked. I now know of, I think, three people who have worked or do work at Intel. One of them at least being Ikey Doherty. And so there's no shock when I see the number one company giving code to Linux is Intel. And to be honest, that makes me feel better about Intel as a company, even though I really like ARM processors and I want competition fiercely. I really do like seeing Intel give code to the Linux kernel, and not surprisingly, whatsoever, which is actually one word, and I just realized that a couple years ago.
It whatsoever totally is
the word. Red Hat's number two. With the amount of stinking money that Red Hat has people throwing at it, they better be the number two contributor. And I say that almost offhandedly because there's no doubt they are. That's how they're successful. That's why they're successful. That's why they're stinking rich, is because it's because they do give so much code back to projects.
That's they're just improving your own recipe, you know, through your own work. You know what I mean? And that's what this needs to be. And I'm glad to see that this top 10 list is nearly chock full, all of them, of industry leaders, huge tech giants. But yeah, to see Microsoft, here's the thing, to your point, to see Microsoft fall off this list, one of two things has happened. Either they aren't doing as much as they were 2 or 3 years ago, or many more organizations are doing much more than they were 2 or 3 years ago, and thus bumping them off the list. And I'm hoping it's that rather than the prior.
That would be nice. Or Microsoft smudged their name because they're left-handed, and they smudged their name on the form, and so they might have credited all their code to either a company called None or a company called Unknown.
That's
because
true.
That's
yeah.
Number 3 and 4, which I'm going to guess is actually like, dare I say, a government institution, whether it be Israel, UK, US, whatever, or just a big company that just wants to remain quiet and do its thing, like Amazon or Facebook.
Right. You know, which is fine. But I mean, yeah, you know, you're looking at Intel, 14,384 changes, number one. Number two, Red Hat, significantly less, 8,987. Now, that's still a lot. It's 8% of the total changes during that time period. But, you know, and that's not to discount, discredit their work whatsoever. But also, you know, you have None, Unknown, Lenaro, Samsung, SUSE, IBM, Consultants, and Renesas Electronics, which I'm not familiar with. So, yeah, overall, I mean, some big names that you would expect to be, that you would hope would be on this list because you know the benefits that they are getting from open source software. I'm glad to see that they are giving back by contributing changes and making the overall community that much stronger.
Yeah, and I mean, I expect Intel to do more than Red Hat just because they're hardware based, so they would do driver support kind of thing.
Right.
But to see SUSE on there really honestly like warms the cockles of my heart, if you will. Because SUSE is one of those companies, they're an RPM based distribution. Let me first say that before I say anything else. SUSE is one of those companies I always wanted to just succeed. I wanted to kick butt because every time I loaded their distro, it felt good. It looked good. I liked the menu structures. I liked the applications. I love the look and feel of every SUSE or OpenSUSE distro I've ever installed. So to see them still around, still kicking, still, you know, giving a lot of code back to the Linux kernel literally makes me feel really good.
Yeah, I'm actually going to probably install OpenSUSE on my main rig again this week, maybe next week. But that'll be my primary OS that I'm using. Right now, yeah, I'm running Ubuntu 14.04 or Ubuntu GNOME 14.04 just on this laptop for some stability for podcasting. But yeah, I want to dip my toe back in, especially after talking with those guys at Linux Fest Northwest, being a fan of theirs over the years, having run OpenSUSE quite a few times. But now they have, of course, their quote unquote, you know, stable slash long term release, and then they have their rolling release in the forms of Leap and Tumbleweed. So it'll be fun to experiment with the two of those for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Good stuff. And the best thing about Suits, I gotta say, is you basically log in, you have everything powered up, you take a cable from a lot of printers, you plug it in, you turn the power on, you wait about 30 seconds, and your printer is installed and configured. You literally don't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah, I still need to try that at a corporate level, because we have these toner-based cartridge printers. Or not, excuse me, not in that cartridge, drum printers.
That, like the big boys?
Yeah. But they have USB mode, and I could bring in a USB A to B cable, you know, out from the laptop into that, and I could probably print documents off of it that way, instead of in a pinch having to run to, you know, FedEx, Kinko's, and order, you know, them by the hundreds or thousands, and then pay for special colored paper and importing fees for files and all that garbage. But yeah, we'll see. Definitely something I should try putting into use.
Well, the big printers, I'll say, which are networkable, and I'm trying to remember like a couple of the names, like Xerox, but there's bigger names out there. When they're network printers, most of them are running a CUP server to where in SUSE, you just say, open a shared printer, scan the network, click, and you're done. So they do make those kind of printers easy as well, but not quite as easy as just, you know, plugging it in and walking away.
Yeah, I'm sure that whatever work I have to put into getting it up and running is going to save me a whole lot of time in the long run, so I'm more than happy to do it.
Very cool.
All right. Well, good group of projects there, Dora, that we spoke about this week. Great to be sort of back into the regular swing of things. We're going to try to do a show next week if Dora doesn't do a single one by himself and or you have another co-host, but I'll be off for a couple weeks because I'll be out of town in the middle of September. So just giving you guys a heads up on that, but it's fantastic to have these audio issues behind me and be doing more tweaking with some new equipment on off hours in order to make sure that we're putting out a better quality product for you, the listeners. So we already got some feedback on episode 200. Thank you for those of you who already sent in some feedback. Really appreciate the good words, kind words. Keep those coming. We'd love to hear from you guys, no matter, you know, what it is, really. We'll love our correspondence from our listeners. Really, really do appreciate that. So keep that coming. Dor, where can we find you online?
Okay. Well, first, Cody, and not that I'm trying to inflate your stature anymore inside of your own head.
Oh, here we go.
Nobody is going to replace you even for a couple weeks, whatever. Because A, it won't feel right, and B, it would be unfair to that person. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
You can hit me up multiple places if you want to join our Mattermost private server, which we did have a couple people join, and the conversation is a little bit increasing, and there's honestly really good people on the server, really good nice people on that server. Think of it as a beautified IRC. And Charles is trying to help me when he has time available. He's trying to make the IRC bridge work on that server so it will actually connect to our Freenode hash podnuts channel. And that will be like one of the rooms in the server. Hopefully we can get that working. Or you can just shoot me an email. You can directly hit me off at mail@podnuts.com or hit me off on Twitter as either Door-to-Door Geek or as Podnuts, or on Google Plus, just search for Door-to-Door Geek, all one word. That is DoorDoorGeek. And if you can, please support the network. The easiest, most painless way is podnuts.com/Amazon. I am going to try to release a survey here in the next week or two, maybe, with honestly help from the community at large, and it cannot understate the assistance that Tracy Holtz has given me for that poll. He's put in a lot of good ideas, and I'm insisting to everybody out there, if you can, please provide feedback. The only way Podnuts can draw more people in, to be honest, is to listen to the people that already listen. So I will ask people, please provide me feedback when that becomes available.
Yes, please. We'd really appreciate those that correspondence and those responses from you to help with improvements on the network. Please do that. If you want to hit me up online, best place, you can just email me, cody@podness.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @CodyCooper, or search for Cody Cooper on Google+. I'm there every single day. Check Twitter several times a week, and then check email every day, too. So however you want to send me a message between those three, those are going to be the best. Appreciate your words there. We're going to continue with these shows, looking to bring a lot more good content out to those listeners. And as a reminder, if you happen to stumble upon this show or stumble upon one other Podnuts show and then on to us semi-recently, check out podnuts.com. There are several other technology shows that are open format or more specific. The one that I would really recommend that you guys listen to if you're at all into tech, of course, is My Hard Drive Died with Scott Molden, also hosted by Jeff Howell. She hosts Podnuts Daily. Fantastic show. I learned so much every single episode I listened to. Scott Molden, for those of you who don't know, is basically the de facto expert in all things storage media. I mean,
in the world.
In the world. And we're not just saying, like, he's this guy that we know that has a lot of experience. No. He's literally an expert, gives talks all around the world. And I mean all around the world, has taught seminars, has been in the business for decades. And he graces us with his presence every few weeks and talks about his day-to-day and how the industry's changing. So just to be up to date on that, because there's so many little nuggets that I take from every show, and I go, I've listened to every single episode multiple times. So definitely check that show out. That is definitely worth your time. Okay, well, in closing, thank you very much for continuing to listen to the show. We're looking to go quite a bit further in this. We're just starting, like I said, the third centennial here. So looking forward to that. But regardless of how long you have been listening or how long you plan on listening, please do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.